You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
I used to let the mic smoke. Now I slam it when I'm done and make sure it's broke. When I'm gone, no one gets on, cause I won't let nobody press up and mess up the scene I set. I like to stand in a crowd and watch the people wonder, damn. But think about a thing you understand. I'm just
Welcome to Axe to Grind, the Hardcore Podcast. I'm Patrick.
I'm Bob.
And I'm Tom.
And have either of you gentlemen been to the Phoenix, Arizona, Mesa, area in recent history?
Yes, I have.
And what are your feelings?
Fan.
Okay.
Yeah, we played a festival that went so poorly that it almost shut down the festival. So that was cool. It was a good lineup.
You know,
we played it.
These things happen.
It was in Mesa. It was Twitching Tongues played, but like the last four bands were Nails, Drop Dead, Indecision, Sick of It All.
It's a good lineup.
Probably about 200 kids in the Nile, that big space. And is that in Mesa?
Yeah, that's I believe that's Mesa.
Like 1,000 cap.
Yeah,
not great.
That's not very encouraging. What do we chalk that up to?
Well, then metal, like deathcore was very big. So everyone that I talked to, like any fucking deathcore band would sell this place out. It's fucking ridiculous that you guys, you know, this lineup doesn't.
You know, Phoenix is also one of those places, large city, growing city, traditionally small punk hardcore scene. Metal goes up and down, but even in that world, I think it's one of the smaller, you know. South Mountain, though, beautiful.
Oh, yeah, really, it's a lovely really part of the country.
Hike, yeah. Yeah, move me to Phoenix tomorrow, except for that 120 degrees during the summer thing. That's not great.
Well, we're all moving to Denver.
It's a bit intimidating.
That's right. Except Patrick, who hates Denver.
Yeah, Denver's like my least favorite place in the United States.
Not true, but he does dislike
it. That's a lie. I can name four places you've mentioned that you hate more than Denver.
Yeah, no question.
Houston, but it's my idea of an unpleasant city. And to our listeners from these places, Philadelphia, Houston, and Denver, I'm talking about your fucking city. I'm talking about your infrastructure. I'm talking about the shit that none of you designed the city. Chill out.
You're not talking about the infrastructure of Denver. What are you talking about?
I know. How much infrastructure? Like, you're just worried about, like,
What are the two main highways that cross through Denver? If you can say it, then I'll listen to you.
70 and 25. Boom.
Good job.
Well, I was going to say,
why do you sound like HR doing Sacred Love?
Because listen.
Are you in jail?
He is HR doing Sacred Love right now.
Yeah, listen, I am in a van in Arizona. This is the best that we could do. It's either that or stand outside in the oddly windy evening. So,
hey, Bob, you know, like Jeremy, like makes plans beforehand and like brings in his equipment and records his podcasts on tour too. You know,
it's wild.
Listen, not to little dick myself, but Jeremy also plays venues with working toilets and maybe even a green room. Whereas I play venues where we hear that somebody was shot 4 days ago and the urinal hasn't been attached to the wall in weeks.
All right.
Just that drug church lifestyle. I've got some more thoughts that we'll get into, but before we insult any other people or cities, let's shout out our sponsors. Run for Cover Records.
Boom.
Deathwish Inc.
Crinkle Crinkle.
And the highlights of today's sponsor reads, To Live a Lie.
Oh, I got to do another vote. I thought we were going to do a collective.
To Live a Lie. And, of course, Closed Casket Activities. Starting with Closed Casket Activities, closedcasketactivities.com. We've talked about this record a few times. I'm going to give it to you one more time. Vane FM, This World is Going to Ruin You. Guys, spoiler, I'm going to do both reads at the same time. Why not? To Live a Lie, tolivealie.com, hit that web store, Spy Habitual Offender. Why am I talking about these two records? One, they're both hot. depending on where your leans and interests are in hardcore at large, these records should be on your radar. If you just like loud, angry, and aggressive, maybe go for both. Two, I'm bringing up both these records because they have been hit by the shutdown world, COVID, et cetera, vinyl delay bug. They both tested positive for the vinyl delay, guys. Shout out to both of these really awesome labels who actually, like, I think you guys know enough label guys. There's the dudes who kind of just are like, yeah, it's cool. You know, we do it. Yeah, you know, you ship the records and it's cool. You get them, it's cool. Then there's the guys, and there's a good amount of them, who take it super serious. We're like, no, no. When I get the records in hand, they immediately start shipping and I don't stop till I'm done.
Right.
That is Will. That's Will at To Live a Lie. That's Justin at Closed Casket. Big shout out to these guys. I believe both sets of records, the Spy Habitual Offender 12 inch, as well as the Vain FM, This World Is Going to Ruin ULP, are in hand. You know, special shout out to Closed Casket Activities. That Vain record, the packaging, Tom, you're waiting to get yours in hand, right?
Yes, I ordered one.
Oh, I saw pictures of it. Looks awesome. Just totally crazy. No slouch, obviously, anywhere, but man, shout out to Closed Casket Activities for just nailing the layout and just giving you a package that a lot of people love this record already. Even if you just like it, this is one you probably need to own because it looks that cool. So go to closedcasketactivities.com, order the Vain FM, This World Is Going to Ruin You LP. Go to tolivealie.com, order the Spy Habitual Offender 12-inch.
Get at it.
Guys, how we doing? How we feeling today?
It's been I just lost the keys for an hour, so there was like a little bit of a chaotic energy, but I think we're back on track.
Who's now, the culprit?
Oh, yeah.
So the person who found the keys is not being forthcoming about where they found the keys. So that calls them into question. But we
they had them in their pocket the whole time.
We can't pin it. We can't pin it on them.
Got it. Got it. They did like the kid thing that you're like, oh, I found them. Yeah, meanwhile, yeah, exactly. they were responsible for losing them. Got it.
So, Pat, this is something near and dear to Tom's heart. Tom, I have a friend in the greater Phoenix area who I hit up Patrick a couple days ago. The guy wanted to get into the show as well as hopefully caught some time with Patrick to interview him. Pat, were you able to connect with my friend?
He is 20 feet from me.
Oh,
he is interviewing other bands.
Incredible. Love to hear it. Thank you for setting that up. Tom, we will often give Patrick crap about missing that. He deserves a lot of credit. Not only did he come through on this, he also came to us prior to his New York show and was like, hey, do you guys need to get in? What's the story?
Which shocked. I mean, cool. He big timed me when I got there, but I mean, as we had mentioned before, but he did offer.
Yeah.
Because someone was like, are you going to the New York show? And I was like, no. I mean, Pat's better at getting my friends in other cities than getting me in my own.
Yeah.
But well, Pat came through and they ripped.
Thank you, PK. Appreciate it. You were looking at the end of the tour. Are you starting to count down the days?
No, we've come
you know,
to the end.
I get like a my
melancholy.
My move to Australia is soon, so I look forward to that. That's very exciting. However, in terms of the actual challenge of being on a somewhat lengthy tour, just add more weeks. I mean, we can't. I have a place to be, but I don't.
Yes.
I almost get sad when things are winding down rather than like excited, you know, because yeah. Like I feel like I'm in the pocket now. I feel like I'm in the zone.
If you didn't have Australia pending, you'd be like, fuck it. Another 2 weeks. I'll go until like
100%.
Yeah.
No, I'd love to hear it.
You need to take it. You need a built in day off though every week. You're getting old.
So I think about this sometimes because I've been sick twice on this tour. And that's in ideal. But in general, when we are a support band, we don't take very many days off at all. If we cannot have any days off, we do it like that. But part of that is financial, right? Because as a support band, you're not getting paid very well.
Sure.
So there's off day shows where we've made basically more money than we made on an entire tour. And we've tried to do that as a headliner. You're making a little bit more money. The off day shows are
there are no such not like,
well, it's not that they're like, yeah, because there's drives or whatever. But also, I feel a weird obligation to sound okay, not good, not great, certainly, but okay. And whenever we do an off day show, it tends to be in a place with an underpowered PA, where I blow my throat out and then I sound bad for 3 days afterwards. So,
right, so I'm saying as a headliner, like you need like, you know, fucking Monday, like you need a day off. That's not like a 12 hour in the van kind of day if you can do it.
Oh no, that's not an option. Like we had yesterday off, but it was a 15 hour drive.
15 hours.
Yeah. We
don't... Texas to Phoenix.
That's
yeah.
Right.
God damn it.
Austin to Phoenix. That's a long drive just in Texas. Like it's deceiving. You know the number when you leave, but you're still shocked how long it takes you to get across.
Oh yeah.
Can we put this on? Let's put this on public record, Tom.
Yes.
I believe you're with me.
I'm with you.
Axe to Grind is a pro Australia podcast, and we are a pro Patrick Kinlan resident of Australia podcast.
We're pro Australia. I'll go that far.
Oh, I'm giving Patrick the seal of approval. Excited for your move. Are you excited?
I'm very excited. It's I've got mixed feelings about the actual state of you know, the Australia as an entity.
Yeah. Well, who doesn't?
The infrastructure.
We barely believe in countries on this podcast, but you know,
yeah,
that's not how I'm speaking.
As in terms of you know, being closer to the woman in my life, of course, and also there's some adventure to moving. I don't know, what is that, 9,000 miles away?
Fucking Crocodile Dundee. Yeah, we got you.
Unfortunately, there's not too many. I mean, what's a frontier, right? There's no such thing as a frontier anymore, I guess. But
I don't know, man. Australian outback might be a frontier.
Sure.
Oh, by the way, sorry for our listeners that don't give a fuck about this, but let me just go off. There is a train that goes across Australia.
That's awesome.
Oh, I would totally take that.
Same.
It's like $2,000 because you're in a I think it's all sleeping cars. I don't think there's any coach, right? So like,
right.
And it seems exclusively for old people, you know, like, I think I'd be the youngest dude on there, but, I'm excited. My girl has zero interest, so I don't know when I will find the time to do this, but.
Ooh, that might be a 4-day.
Is that like going across the United States?
Yes.
It's like going across the United States.
Yeah. So you're totally for it. Wow.
But what I'd like to do, sorry for everybody listening that has no fucking interest. I would like to go from Perth, instead of going to Sydney, go from Perth to Adelaide and then from Adelaide to Darwin. That would give me the most time in the outback. And there's a number of stops where like people dress in old timey outfits and like tell you about the history of Australia and shit. But like I said, this is very much an old, like, oh, by the way, I have 17 hours in Singapore.
Oh, boy.
And how much do you fellas know about Singapore?
Pretty good amount. What do you want to know? What are we going for?
Okay. So the only part that's germane to me is there's a mandatory death penalty for drug trafficking. Now, It's highly unlikely I'll be trafficking drugs. However, I don't trust, like, this is where I hope I don't come off like a paranoid on this podcast, but I have like a very strong distrust of, I guess you'd say cops. I have a distrust of legal systems broadly. Yeah, and
Singapore is a country with a badge. You know what I mean? It might as well be the cop country.
That's what I'm saying. And I just don't trust the idea that somebody, for whatever reason, it doesn't have to be a reason that makes any sense on paper, just the fact that it can happen, that should somebody choose to set you up, plant something on you, just jam your shit up, you don't go away there. You go to an execution chamber. So like, it's just, I'm weirdly paranoid about it. I'm not leaving the airport because I just don't, I'm, and for me,
this is the part where, as a man of age who has been straight edge for several decades, when is the last time you had drugs in your hand?
Oh,
ever?
Maybe never.
I think you're going to be okay on this one, brother. We're calling paranoid detectives on this one.
Here's the thing though. Think about it. So like, if you have like, I forget what it is, it's some 14 grams or something, right? I don't even know what that is in drugs, but like that's like, if you have like 14 grams of cannabis, you're executed, some nonsense like that. Right. Mm-hmm. And, but if you have like detectable, like dog smelled weed on your bag sort of thing, mm-hmm. you can do 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to be, Singapore and not the Philippines. I think the Philippines had that as well. Or maybe
Singapore is really strict on this stuff. Yeah.
So Singapore is more on like a Judge Dredd thing. The Philippines are on some, like, they've deputized neighbors with grievances to hunt other neighbors.
Yeah. They're on the purge level. Yeah.
Yes. Wow. Yeah. It was really bad. Like, so Tom, for a time there was basically you could essentially deputize your way into executing your neighbor, seizing their property.
Keep talking.
Really bad. So anyway, long story short, I lived in, I'm passing through California where weed is just omnipresent. I get paranoid about the idea that a dog is going to smell weed on my shoe. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, just, I get you. Something.
Yo, let's foolproof you. You're getting brand new shoes. You're gonna stay super. You're gonna go to the sober house. No, that's a bad idea.
You don't own any clothes.
Yeah, yeah. You get yourself all new clothes that are like straight up sterilized. You pick them up from the tailor you go to, who tailors all your t-shirts, as we've discussed, and make sure they're perfect. And you take them off as you go to LAX. That's it. Maybe you put them on in the bathroom in LAX once you're through the gates.
I can't be alone.
You're not worried about LAX though, right?
No.
No. But here's the thing. I just can't be alone in distrusting like an authoritarian government, right? Like
I mean, Locked Up Abroad. I've seen that show.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe I've seen too much of that.
To this conversation, and a really scary thing that I haven't seen, you know, not to get worst possible timeline here. The situation in Shanghai is wild, and I don't see any conversation in reality about it. Have you guys?
Okay, so here's a problem with that, Bob, is right now there is we're not talking about it the way we were talking about it when Trump was on television all the time, but I think that there is actually less trust in news than there ever has been. For example,
that's true.
The Ukraine situation. So the Ukrainians are facing a threat of the type that the most of our listeners can't even comprehend. So they are incentivized to not tell the full truth, because any sane person would do whatever they had to do to keep their borders and their safety. And all, so like, lying to the world, like, all three of us would lie to the world to keep our families alive, right?
Sure. No question.
So right now the Ukrainians are in a situation where they're what they are reporting to the world might be 100% true. There might be massacres, there might be mass rapes, there might be even chemical weapons, which is the thing that was alleged just today. However, they are strongly incentivized to relay this message to the world, whether or not it's true. So you're in this crazy situation where you can't trust the side that you would even be sympathetic to right now. And same thing with the China shit. China, like,
we are predisposed. I mean, the sane people in the United States are predisposed to have a bad feeling about totalitarian governments. So
let's say, let's call it a healthy skepticism.
So, yeah. So of course we're going to say, oh, yo, I believe this. I believe the worst thing that I'm getting told. Right. But it's also, I mean, propaganda exists, right? Sure. I have no idea what the facts on the ground are. I've seen some video that is absolute horror to me, but you can also, like, we could do that for almost any major incident. For example, I have no doubt that the way North Korea is reporting on our subway shooting this morning, I have no doubt that the way that they're reporting on that is, strictly speaking, dishonest. You know what I mean? So I don't know who to believe, and I don't think anybody knows who to believe. So this is all to say, I don't know what to make of the China situation, except that it looks like ass.
Yeah. Everybody, I mean, whatever. That's not what you're here for. Be sympathetic to the plight of others, and totalitarian authority. It's a weird thing. Still not with it.
Still not with it.
Yo, let's talk about some hardcore.
Let's do it.
Tom.
Yes.
Welcome to the Hardcore Podcast.
I thought we were trying to make out like we were trying to split episodes with Worst Possible Timeline.
Nah. Who knows?
He's going out of town.
Man, what happens to Worst Possible when you get to Australia? Everything just remoting?
Yeah, I mean, supposedly I've got good Wi-Fi. Australia has notoriously bad Wi-Fi, but supposedly I've got the best you can get.
Okay, let's make sure that's the best you can get. I am excited because there's a festival happening in Birmingham, Alabama called Furnace Fest that I think generated a lot of interesting opinions last year and this. And that's kind of an interesting thing. Tom, I'd like you to ask me this question. Bob, how many bands are you excited about on Furnace Fest?
I feel like this is a trick question. Bob, how many bands are you excited for on Furnace Fest?
I don't know, like 8, 10, 9, 10, something like that, maybe.
How many would you be excited on a majority, say, hardcore festival?
Thank you for the follow-up. If you like more than 5 bands playing and your age is over 30, you're fucking good about it. Yes. There's a lot. Let me look right now. I'm looking at the headliners. None of them do anything particularly for me on those first liners. But second line, you get bands I love, you know. At least 3 bands I love in there. Quicksand, AN, Avail. And stuff I'm interested in. So you guys are both playing.
We are.
This is interesting. Not the same day, though. How do we fuck that up, guys?
Yeah, you know what? I that was probably my bad.
Yeah.
Just because when we got the offer, I was like, hey, is there any way, knowing the schmucks that I have to deal with, that I was like, you know what, let's do Saturday.
Yeah. Because safer bet. Right.
Right. Like Justin doesn't have to like open a soup, you know, like cut the ribbon at a supermarket. He doesn't have to like kiss baby, shake hand. Like it's a Saturday. If worse comes worse, I can get him on a flight like Saturday morning.
Right.
That was my thought. Which ended up resulting in us being on like the far more emo day.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Which I'm cool with.
Well, Drug Church is on Friday, which is the Belmont day, which is sick.
Pat's going to come out and he's going to be washing the tractor.
My country. Yeah. We're going to get that song. We still need to do that special episode. So if the Belmont She's guys are listening,
my country girl.
I have, world. I started writing my list. I have approximately 73 questions to ask fella from Belmont about this song. So let's get a very special episode going. Someone set that up.
Was the first question, how dare you?
No, the first question is your personal interest in following this as a sound for your band from here out. Rate it between 1 and 10. Go. Because that's the direction they should go.
Yeah, I got to imagine it's 10 out of 10.
Taz, get at us. We got to talk about this.
People
don't know what we're talking about. The song, Google Belmont Country Girl and hear something you've never heard before.
It's an earworm. Yeah,
just trip out.
Trip out. Watch the music video. It's wild.
They're a Chicago based band.
Oh yeah, taking the back roads back to Illinois.
Yeah. Wow, Bob really has listened to this.
I know all the songs. We were chasing cows. We was wrangling. Let's keep going. I have so many lyric questions on this one. So is this fest more or less divisive than it was last year? And it's hard because you guys are both playing. Feels less divisive to me.
I would say
as an
less.
Outsider. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think this seems like more of like just a big festival. Mm-hmm. While last year
felt like it was trying to catch the zeitgeist of a thing that it was
20 years ago.
Right.
Yeah, I think that was more like, you know, last year was kind of, it seemed a little bit too kind of like high school reunion-y.
Yep.
And this just seems like, oh, it's like a, I mean, most of the headliners are older bands, but it's like, oh, well, these are big bands that would headline any festival.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
because the big bands headlining, looking at the first date, those are all still active bands. Second, yeah. All active bands except for the question mark one.
I mean, the question mark one will be an active band.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, I know who it is. Mm-hmm. But, and I mean, quite honestly,
you can't say it because it's a rainy day. So we can't talk about it.
Right. And full transparency, it's one of the main reasons that I decided to put up with the process of getting Most Precious Blood to play shows.
Mm.
There's a few things on here that it's like bucket list stuff that it's like, I'd be foolish to turn it down.
And same thing, third day. All are headlining bands. So you look at the lineup up and down, and there's a lot more active bands, be they current, be they legacy, etc. There's a lot of bands who are still doing the damn thing.
Yeah, I mean, what festival are you going to go to where it's like, so they added Gojira. That was one of the bands. So it's Mastodon, Gojira, Descendants, and The Story So Far.
Yeah, so at that point, you're getting into like Euro festival. Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I know, you know, certain dorks like to do the whole, like, this was hardcore. Like, I don't think they're even trying to, they're not coming at it in that way. Cause I mean, they did this last year. It was like 15 or 20,000 people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Is there another hardcore festival that does 15,000 people? There's not a hardcore fest that does 1500 people at this point.
No. So, listen, I don't presume everybody that books my bands listens to Axe to Grind, but many do, and I'm just gonna say that I'm never gonna take an offer and then shit on anybody. You know what I mean? Like, I hate that energy. I hate that energy where you like you'll take somebody's money, but you're gonna act like you're better than them. I don't like that.
I hate that shit.
But I will tell the truth about like my impression of a thing, and I think that promoters understand that, and there's no hard feelings on that. I think last year I was the one that was like, this doesn't bother me. Like this is fine. Like it's a little old home week for my taste, you know, but the fact is that there was a number of bands that I would have liked to see. And I told one of the guys that books the thing the other day when I met him, I said, listen, I'm with the cool headliners that play, but I love the spent bands. I love them. Like, I love the guys that haven't played music in 15 years and look like shit on a stage who are enjoying themselves. Now, do I want to see that with any frequency? No, but I think that there's something to it, particularly for the kids from the South who, as they'll tell it, that they would drive 400 miles in any direction to see shows, and they all kind of got to know each other through shows that were pretty far away from each other. It would be like Albany having like some kinship with Detroit. You know what I'm saying? Like
that you could do. Yeah.
Right.
Right. So as I've talked to a couple of people that are excited about it on this tour, and including one of the fellows that books it, and they describe the same shit, which is, yeah, it's a good vibe because it's all people who slept on each other's floors 20 years ago and now have, many of them have families. I mean, some of them probably got no family and just a drug problem, but like, you know, like a lot, just different life courses or whatever. But it's not a bad thing to revisit. It's not a pathetic thing to revisit. It's a nice time, right?
It seemed like a good time.
Well, Tom, here's what convinced me. So the one fellow I was talking to, I said, what's the breakdown between old heads and young people? And are you aiming, because you got to steer this in a direction because you're going to run out of reunion style bands, right? So you got to steer it. What's the plan? And he showed me a video of Turnstile playing it.
Yeah.
That was a lot of young heads. It was not the Grays that I was watching stage dive to that, or more accurately crowd surf, but it was young people. And I said, oh shit, what's this about? And he said, he was honest. He said, young people showed up for like a half dozen bands, had little interest in some of the older bands, but it made for a good mix and everybody got along. So like,
right.
Sounds fine to me. You know what I mean? And not for nothing. If Drug Church and Fiddlehead are two of like the, I guess, young popping things, even though to call either of us young is absurd. But
well, I mean, that's the whole thing too. It's like, what, fucking Morning Again and Dusty, because they're 43, but
Pat Flynn is in his late 30s and I'm 112.
Right, but you guys are brand new. Like, it's
Well, that's a great point, actually. Is, and this is a topic for a larger topic for another day. When do we assign dustiness? Like when does that mantle land on somebody's
right, just because you're in a new band, a newer band. I mean, I just looking at the lineup and stuff, it's like there's a few bands on here that like would be pretty important for my own personal fucking, not even a resume, but like my own experience in playing in music and playing in hardcore, that like quite honestly, otherwise would never have a chance to have played with them.
Yeah, I mean, that's
to me, that's a big deal. I've echoed that from the beginning of the podcast. Like, we're not doing it for money. We're not doing it for, like, we want experiences. So for me to be like, I'm playing with fucking Cursive and Pedro the Lion. When the fuck am I ever going to play with Cursive and Pedro the Lion? Or Elliot. Yeah. Like, Elliot was a big pull for me because I love fucking Elliot. I'm not playing with Elliot. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's stuff on here that, like, you know, like, we could play a hardcore festival. And of course, I mean, there's no fucking change. I mean, obviously, we love hardcore. And, like, I'd play any of them. But, like, you know, the chance to kind of be able to play with other bands that, like, you know, we're playing a lineup with the Descendants again. Like, that's crazy. I feel like Denver for that. You know what I mean? Like, I know this is part of, like, your kind of touring or whatever, but like, for me, it's kind of like, fuck, this is like a
cool experience. Listen, I can be kind of I take things for granted. That's I think both of you fellas will acknowledge that's part of my nature, you know what I mean? So when I'm in the moment, I'm maybe not paying as much attention as I should, but the fact is, you're not wrong. Like, there's some acts that I, you know, like, where would I have an opportunity to play with them again? I don't know.
You're playing with E-Town and Integrity and Madball.
Yeah, the Madball one is pretty good. I mean, I think somebody reported to you fellas, I was geeked the time that we played with Sick of It All. I was like embarrassing myself on stage because I was like fanboying out because, yo, when I was what, fucking 16, the band imprinted on me in a very major way. So like for so many years later to play underneath them is a joy. And yeah, I think that there's a lot to that. You're not wrong. I should be looking at this with a kind of fan mentality.
Right. And I mean, it's also, you happen to be playing, you know, you'll be playing a show on, maybe if it's a tour or if it's a one-off, whatever the story is, you'll probably be playing in front of fucking 5,000 people.
Yeah, that shit's all cool.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so it's like, I don't, you know, like, for someone like us, like, probably not going to get down in that general area again. So, like, if you want to hear, like, Most Precious Blood, Nothing in Vain songs, this is probably going to be your shot.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we're not coming through on the next, like, that's like, you know, so it's, it's an experience. I'm like, this is a show. Like, I would, like, if it wasn't such a don't, like, I would have gone to, I would have probably have gone to this. You know, I mean, I do, full transparency, I think the X beer X thing still corny as fuck.
Yes.
I mean, I totally whatever. I
forgot that was a thing.
That, I think that was like my main takeaway from last year. I was like, yo, that's fucking weak as shit. I still think it's weak. If they want to come up with some kind of fucking like extra grind cola or something, or extra grind, you know, bottled water.
Canned water.
Canned water.
Get to can, no bottles. Get rid like, of plastic.
Like, right, some like liquid death type shit with an extra grind logo on it. We'll let's chat.
There we go. Let's
chat. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I think it's whatever, man. Like, I think, you know, people like
to, I mean, I think the interesting thing is the transition from last year to this year. And it's like, where we can be last year, whenever the fuck the last one happened. It wasn't last year, right?
No, it was.
It was? Okay, then it was last year. It was supposed to be the year before, right? Or
it got, right, it kept getting moved because of the goddamn pandemic. Yeah.
So I think it's interesting actually to talk about, because we weren't, I'd say we were critical. I think critical is a fine word to use about some of it. And this year we're less. And so there's the first thing, you guys are both playing. So it's like, are we being, no.
If I had that much of a problem with it, quite honestly, we wouldn't have done it.
Done it. Exactly. I think, if anything, we highlighted some of the idea that, like, it felt on the outside as trying to grasp at something that it had 20 years ago. And that, to be honest, it, like Pat said, pulled a lot more young eyes than we thought.
Mm-hmm.
And that's cool. And that's something we're always talking about. Like, I'm forever wondering, like, yo, when I go to a hardcore show and it seems like the youngest person there is 25, I'm like, oh, that's kind of a bummer and weird. And this year, the lineup, it's pretty reflective of, not to say hardcore, but the larger thing that hardcore is enveloped in, as well as, you know, like punk, hardcore, adjacent, metal, core, whatever. It's got a lot. It's got a little bit of something for everyone. And like I said, like, when I can count and get beyond one hand on bands, I'm like, yeah, I'd watch that. I actually would stop and go see that. That's good. Especially, yeah, and I would say for most people, they're going to be significantly beyond me on that.
Can I do something obnoxious? Wow. How many monthly listeners does Poison the Well have on Spotify?
Oh, let's guess. Let's guess.
98,000.
All right. Patrick?
I'm looking at it, so you got to guess.
Oh, one. All right. You said 98. I'm going to go. You got to be close. I'm going to say 105.
88.5. Now, here's the question that you are going to. Neither of you, I don't think, will have a grounding for this. I'm just the reason I looked it up is because I thought I saw a discrepancy in my idea of billing. Now, I'm not putting this festival together, and I trust the people that are putting it together. But how many monthly listeners does Demon Hunter have? Are either of you familiar with Demon Hunter?
No. I mean, I know of them, but I've never listened to them. I think I looked it up and was shocked. It's like 250,000 or something, like, ridiculous.
No. 476,000 monthly listeners.
Wow.
So 500,000 roundabouts. Monthly listeners, Bob, here's what you need to know about Demon Hunter. Demon Hunter, I want to say, is one of the fellas, maybe both of the fellas from Training for Utopia, who are visual artists, and really plugged into that, tooth and nail scene, that, solid state scene, right? Like, they did the visuals for so much of it. The Clarks, I want to say the names. And, they started a band after their kind of like dead guy rip off, like their Christian dead guy, right?
Okay.
Which I actually love. Training for Utopia, for anybody that hasn't heard it, there's two Training for Utopia records that are fucking awesome, and then there's one that is, but it's Christian dead guy. And after that, they did Christian. Tom, do you have any familiarity? Is this Christian, goddamn, what's the,
I always assume they sounded like Chimaira.
Okay, I was thinking, we talked about Jesse Leach. What the fuck is the
Killswitch Engage?
To my memory, it's like a Christian Killswitch, but I could be wrong. Anyway, the point is that it's, Bob, it was like intentionally big room metal for Christians.
Okay.
And I think was kind of,
unapologetic. You have my attention so far. Okay.
But I think kind of unapologetic on every level.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool.
Leaning in. And they're playing below Poison the Well. Now, I think Demon Hunter, I think part of the thing about Demon Hunter, whatever we want to call it, was that they weren't a hard touring act. I think part of the thing that was interesting about them, if I recall, and our Christian metal fans might be able to, our listeners might be able to correct me, but I think that they were not a hard touring act. And that was kind of the thing, like, oh, they've got families. Oh, they've got careers, but they've also got 500,000 monthly listeners and a bunch of records. So yeah, that's, but they're playing below things that are,
as far as you know.
How do you mean playing below? Oh, well, Poison the Well is a sub headline. So I that's sure. the reason that one jumped out to me.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of, you know, I don't know how much, I mean, I'm sure they're a huge band. Yeah. The Spotify stuff is really hard to tell.
It's totally disconnected so far as I can tell from live. It's really strange.
But yeah, I'm sure, like, you know, there'll be tons of people that are there strictly for the more Christian bands, which is what it was like in the 2000s, yeah. Honestly, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, there was always a divide.
But I mean, the shows, the last one was fun. I mean, you know, other than the drama that went on yeah. during our set, but like, you know, it was cool. Place is awesome. Andrew WK played one of the best shows I've ever seen a human being play.
No shit.
It was literally one of the craziest shows I've ever seen.
Here's a question. Has Andrew WK been forced into a memory hole?
Is it the same Andrew WK?
That's a great question. Wait, what?
There's a theory. All right. So when I was out in Denver, I was talking about this. There's a theory. Number one, that Dave Grohl recorded that first Andrew WK record and then hired an Andrew WK.
Okay.
And then there's a theory that there have been two different human beings playing yes. the character of Andrew WK.
Yeah. So Bob, this is a mantle, in comic book terms. It's
sure.
It's not,
yeah, yeah.
It's not a person, but an identity.
The new creative team has taken the position.
Yeah, taken in a new
yeah,
direction.
Yeah. This is the Jason Todd.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I mean,
the look. Danny Ketch.
Oh, geez. Tom, how many monthly listeners do you think Andrew WK has on Spotify?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I'm going to say in that 400 range.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to say a little less. I'm going to say 250.
531.5.
Fuck.
Mm. Not bad.
That first one was a lot of fun, man.
So he hasn't been pushed down the memory hole totally.
Not totally. And he played this last year. And I think that's also something to keep in mind. Like, I think last year it was thought of as like a one-off.
Yes.
So it did have a more high school reunion feel. And they also kind of like, you had like Knocked Loose and Turnstile and like every, you know, the few bigger, like really, 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 really big new bands were already on there.
Yeah. True.
Like, I feel like if they knew this was going to be an ongoing thing, they'd be like, well, maybe we'll get Knocked Loose for next year.
Not to tell the tales out of school, but I had a little conversation about, had a conversation about other people's money, but about how if you book far enough in advance, you can get certain bands for a song and then never again. You know what I mean? Because people's rates go up. So it's fascinating. There's a lot of bands. I mean, Turnstile would be a great example. I don't think that this is telling tales out of school, because any intelligent person can assume that their festival rate has gone up significantly in the last year. But what you could have gotten that band for 2 years ago versus what you'd be paying today is pretty crazy. And that's the nature of the game. And for people that kind of don't understand how booking works at all, which is a large number of people, I find, things are booked a year out. You know what I mean? So you're going with your rate today. And we'll often find yourself playing on agreements that don't necessarily make sense.
Time before. Well, yeah, that's yeah. It slides on that. Sometimes it's 3 months. Sometimes it's 6 months. A lot more often in that range, 6 months out. I mean, yo, this current drug church tour that's finishing up was booked well over a year ago.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, but that's also like, you know, some of that is there was a real panic among booking agents to get
that's true.
Every, you know, but
that's the example. You know, you see a lot of stuff that's you feel good if you have your next 6 months booked. If you have your next 12, maybe you feel good. But if you've locked in money, sometimes that's good and sometimes it's not great.
Right. So that's Pat telling you to get in now while you can still afford him.
Yeah. Buy low.
Right. So like next year, like festival season. Don't come at him for less than five figures. That's including the decimal and the zero though. But I mean,
well, the joke, not joke, is that we're going to have to raise our asking price to, you know, at least $1,600 because that's what it's going to take to get me off of Australia. You know,
I think today, that's a fair price.
Today, Pat.
He's gonna come back with an accent
in Australia. Oh god, I'd be so excited if you picked up an accent.
And I work on that? Patrick.
I will. Governor. I'm sure I will just by exposure. The so who lives there? The kid from La Dispute either does or did live in Australia, right? That's an American that lives an American musician who lives in Australia. I want to say one of the fellas from Trash Talk. Does that ring a bell to you
guys?
Or did I make that up? Okay. Wow. I found out 20 minutes ago the kid from Clock Cleaner is doing like solo music in Cambria.
Shark.
That's exactly right. I'm trying to think.
His project is it Puerto Rican Flowers? He did this project that was. I mean, I like the first couple Clock Cleaner records, and some of the later material has some tracks too. But
Is he the kid responsible for Puerto Rican Flowers? That's actually pretty good. Yes,
it's really good, actually. It's really good. If people haven't heard that, that might have kind of got sifted out, but that was low-key one of the better records that came out, six
2016?
Yeah, 6 years ago now? Damn.
Yeah, that was good. At any rate, those are we're going to form a super group.
Are you going to do like the Come and Correct version of Drug Church over there?
Yes.
And just Pat just taking it out on the road playing fucking.
he's gonna give them the bet. Like, look, if there's something you just need to do a weekend for while I'm here, that's fine. Just Brian Murray can sing, and I'll have my scabs, and we'll be building a base here.
Smart move.
I've told my bandmates they could for one-offs they can just put together anything that sounds special enough. You know, like
I mean, that's when you get like Justice or Jeremy to sing for him.
Exactly.
Or Pat. Like,
Flynn. Exactly. Yeah. How interesting is that there's like a circle of dudes whose bands would have crossed over or did or didn't, but could have, that are like now kind of in the same sphere. It's interesting. I don't know. I find the way that the fellas who are still around, it kind of gets boiled down to we all know each other. I think that's kind of an interesting phenomenon.
Well, I will pitch that because I was thinking about this today while I was cleaning dishes. This music scene, hardcore in general, is so much smaller than people realize.
Yes.
By benefit of just being around for X amount of time and doing stuff. Look, I want to shout out the people who don't do stuff other than go to shows, enjoy it, and then live their lives. I love you. I envy you.
Shout out.
You are important and cool. Thank you. For the people who do stuff, love you too. You're cool too. Great, great, great. But you end up knowing people. And it reminds you how much smaller the world is of people who do stuff. Just because it's like, there's no reason per se to know all these people, but you just do because of this world. Are there other things like that? Is that the way everything is?
No.
I don't know. I'd say there's a lot of subcultures that probably, like, look, if you're into like garage, I'm sure that you know the other garage guys. And if you're, you know, Stuff like EDM seems a little too large to me, but maybe, you know, maybe
even like stuff that like Andy does.
Like herpetology and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, you do. There ends up being some overlap.
Like this is a guy. This is the guy. You end up meeting people
because. Yeah, you end up meeting people because, like, oh yeah, I'm going here. Oh, this guy knows this guy, and yeah, that's true.
So it's small enough and weird enough, just like hardcore, that people like not a ton of folks being involved.
Man, you just made a new hardcore T-shirt. Small enough and weird enough. Hardcore.
There you go. There you go, Pat.
print it now.
Print it. I do think about that. I think it's interesting because for all the good things, the level of acrimony about something that in reality is a pretty small interconnected network can get unsettling.
I had to take a breath the other day because I found myself there's we're down to very few people, maybe like 15 people in all of hardcore music that I've got any type of problem with. You know what I mean? Right. And when I say problem, I mean like it's an extended, like, are people like, I have a problem with somebody that you're tight with, so maybe we've got a problem. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's not an on-site type thing.
Not at all.
It's an extended slight.
And truthfully, it's just a, hey, if we're going to shake hands, let me just address this real quick, and then we can go back to being normal if that's something you want to do. You know what I mean? Like it's sort of that sort of thing. So it's not a lot of people, and there's maybe like what, three that I've got a real problem with of any type. But I was reflecting on it because I saw a photograph of somebody that I do not like. And I was thinking, I got to get it out of my soul because
Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
I'm getting to the age where if you are wishing people ill will, you look fucking pathetic. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. you just look like a fucking decrepit old fucking weird goblin. So even if you're forcing it, I think after a certain age, you've got to be the guy that's like, just hope everybody's staying safe, doing the right things. All right, God bless. You know what I mean? Like, because I think once you got a little bit of gray in your hair, or hating, you look so much like a fucking hater.
Yo, you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. And it's the boy. Maybe you at a younger age you just have more vic and vigor and can deal with a little more hate in your system, but you might just have more time.
Oh, that's, I mean,
and that's what it boils down to, because yo, the negativity of that, oh, it'll just consume. And I almost get mad if I have any of it, that it's even taking up any of my head space. And so now it's just explode, like move away from it and like push it as far as I can away and just detach and hey, good health.
You know, that's all. Okay. So you know how, like, when I get asked by interviewers a lot, how do you find the time to do all your shit? Right. And like, I always say it seems ridiculous to me because I'm not doing that much, but let's say that I am. It's only because I'm not fighting people online. You know what I mean? Like where do you find the time? Oh, I made the time by not staying up till 2 a.m. waiting for this idiot to respond so that I can jump on his shit. You know what I mean? So like that's where I found the time.
Yo, I have been playing I think I mentioned it's this weird like basketball, this like agent simulator thing that has been my, okay, I'm going to go click open to one of the social medias. No, I'll go to this. I am currently have a net worth of $2 billion.
That's what happens when you don't go online. You become a billionaire.
That's just what it is. Stop opening Instagram, become a billionaire. That's what it is.
It's hard in the van. I got to say that.
It's hard. Give it to us.
Well, in a van, there's certain guys that have like laser focus. They can be super productive, et cetera. They usually end up being tour managers, you know, but like for most of us,
got one.
For most of us, there's just the noise. It's, you can't do anything well. So what you end up doing is bullshit. And that's shit like looking at Instagram and being like, oh, that's weird. He hasn't posted about his wife in a long time. Oh no. You know what I mean? Like you do, like that's the shit that you find yourself doing. Like you get yourself into nobody's business territory where you're like, Oh yeah, right. Last time I saw that they were going on vacation. Oh, who's this? Oh, I don't know
this person. Then you become like the sleuth.
Yeah.
Oh shit! She hasn't liked some his photos since November 2021. What the fuck?
I never go that deep.
Oh, I know quite a few people that'll go that deep.
Yeah, but you can still find yourself caring about shit that you don't care about. Like frankly, do not care about, does nothing for your life. But you can still if you are in a van for 15 hours, as I was yesterday, you can find yourself being like, okay, all right, that's interesting. You know what I mean? And that's how that works, because certainly both of you gentlemen will remember, but Bob was probably living with me at the time. Moments where I have too much free time, and I'll just be like, oh, let's get in trouble online, huh? You know what I mean?
I mean, when I bring you up, like when the podcast comes up and they're like, who's, so it's Bob and who's the other guy? I'm like, Patrick. They're like, the guy from Bridge Nine Board?
Yeah.
Like you're still known for that.
Yeah. I'm very blessed.
Yeah. I mean, it should be something that you're proud of, but.
So the point of this is, if you find yourself down that hole, you know what a wise man said, if you're in a hole, stop digging.
Yes.
Stop digging. Get out of the hole.
You may find yourself.
Yes.
At the bottom of a hole.
In the bottom of a hole in a giant suit.
Yo, so what else is going on in hardcore today? Oh, just to let people know, quick audience touch base. Mosh Madness just had a pause because it's a little harder to do with the inconsistent schedule. We had a bunch of preloaded recorded episodes. It will be returning very shortly. So
we will finish it by the World Series.
Yes. No yes. question.
Probably
no
before. Doubt. Hopefully. Maybe by like the NBA Finals. No, maybe not. That's pretty
no,
close.
But we'll finish it by the end of the summer for sure, though.
All right.
Yeah. We'll finish it before the end of the summer. We can. That's a bet. Okay, folks.
Done.
So, but hardcore of the day. Patrick, what else are you hearing out on the streets? You're in the streets. You know what I mean?
Crazy.
He's of the night, you know?
I think I've mentioned this probably, but we're playing with Soulblind, and I've rarely seen a band pick up fans as readily as this band does. So every show they play, they're absorbing some of Drug Church's audience. And so. It's honestly what you hope for when you like pick a support act, and as a support act, it's 100% what you hope for. But I think that part of it is that they're a really great live band. I think part of it is that their songs are catchy, but I think part of it is also like, this is kind of the sound that they're mining is an interesting, maybe to some people, maybe if you're older, it seems obvious or whatever. But I think that if you're younger, it's a really interesting pull, you know, right. It's grunge, but it also borrows. I mean, I don't know if they started, I haven't heard their earliest material, but I don't know if they started as more of kind of like one of these louder shoegaze style acts, you know, like, or new gaze. It's conceivable that they did, but now they have legitimately heavy parts. And I think that there's kind of something that'll always grab you about that. But I think that grunge, okay, sure. But then that alternative that was on the fringes of grunge, which is,
well, it's the heaviness, it's the gritty, yeah, ugly heaviness that's cool.
Yeah, but I think that they borrow more from the fringe of grunge than any direct grunge thing. So what that does, in my view, is it doesn't give you an immediate, you could say Alice in Chains, because they have plenty of Alice in Chains in them, but it's not exact. And there's something from the fringe of that sound that is, it's not the entry level. So you can't just reach for it the way that you can reach for Alice in Chains, right? If something sounded exactly like Alice in Chains, you go, oh yeah, it sounds like a fucking Alice in Chains, right? But like, if something is like, yeah, you're like, I don't know, maybe some like, you know, Candlebox or whatever. And half the people, you know, if you're under 35, you're going to be looking at me like, what the fuck is Candlebox? And then I can go, dickhead, your dad listens to active rock radio when he paints. Yeah,
if you're
when he paints,
but you know what?
You've heard far behind.
100%.
It's the yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, you could say it's like the deep cut tracks off the Candlebox album, the big one. There's that element of grunge. I think if you really plugged, if you wanted to sell this to someone cool, you'd say, "Yo, find yourself a halfway point between My Bloody Valentine and the Melvins," with a heavy dash of Alice in Chains, and people will be like, oh, that's interesting. Cause that's kind of where I find Soulblind.
I hear that.
Even though I feel like they're more aggressive in a live performance than that even gives credit for. So
yeah,
I think it's cool as hell. And that's like, I don't know when they're doing a full length proper. They are a full length band to me. That's what I'm waiting for. I think their last EP was very good. I'm excited to hear what's coming next, but I'm waiting for Foley.
My understanding is it is recorded. It is currently being mixed.
All right.
Love to hear it.
That was a good idea for getting Soulblind on that tour, Bob.
Oh, credit to
the group chat.
Yeah, credit to the chat. Credit to I think the other drug churchers were Soulblind heads too, right?
So Corey, who just opened the door, has been pumping this band since they were on the demo. So that was part of it. Was part of just like a, do we have any names? Corey's got a name. Corey fucking loves the Soulblind band, and it's like I'd met them once, thought they were cool, honestly. You know, not to sound crass, their Spotify numbers are shockingly good for a band that doesn't have an extensive tour history. Like,
let me just do this. Guess them, Tom. Guess what Soulblind's monthly listeners are.
58.
No, that would be shocking.
That would be about 43, which is still crazy.
That's nuts.
For a band with, a couple singles out.
Does that put them above Rollins Band? Take a look. It almost did the other day. Yeah, maybe they've gone past them now.
Rollins Band 46. They're getting there. And okay. This is only End of Silence is on there. They need to get Lifetime on here.
Nobody's going to listen anyway. Something we should talk about someday is that nobody actually listens to Rollins.
So Rollins just did a spoken word tour that I guess did very well. However,
no music.
He was doing those like stand-up tours and spoken word things in the 90s that were hugely successful, to the point where there was a cottage industry of people selling bootleg videos of them.
That's what people know him from now. Yeah. If it's just straight up, I don't want to disrespect people that are fucking more successful than me, but like I was listening to two comic creators talk about Henry Rollins only in terms of his spoken word, and then they briefly acknowledged Black Flag as a thing that they weren't really familiar with, but just that it was really punk, you know what I mean, like, oh, really punk, whatever. But like, so he has this, like, for lack of a better word, normie, he has this credibility that they don't need to know anything more about.
He's had a second career.
Yeah, and then he's got this second career.
That's probably
healthy,
bigger.
Healthy. Yeah, no. I mean,
which is crazy. Look,
all right, so for the uninitiated, like, if you haven't heard Black Flag, you should probably stop the podcast and go listen to Black Flag, but we're going to assume you have, that even Wilson from Westchester has heard Black Flag and knows that Henry Rollins sang for them. I think Rollins' band has been lost to the sands of time quite a bit.
They had hits.
Had hits. So they had, if you are a person into heavier hardcore, the record Lifetime is awesome in a way where it borders up to metal but never goes metal almost at all. Like I love it. It's heavy and weird in the way that Black Flag is, but without the weird Greg Ginn
I would put it, here's a take. I would put it as the middle point between Helmet and Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Well, I think they go more I'm not even mad at that. I think there's some better sonic references because Lifetime predates it, but certainly by what's the record that Liar is on?
Because there was End of Silence, and then there was one after that.
Yes, so it actually hits MTV Buzzbin, has a music video that's super popular, and ends up being like mid-tier Lollapalooza tour band. You know?
Yes. I mean, that was 100% their pocket. Their little lane was the alt metal crowd.
Yeah, like, oh, we can go and probably play 5,000 cap rooms as a almost headliner in our strong spots, and in our weak spots, we're probably able to draw 2,500.
Oh, also, we play with Ozzy some days and L7 others.
Yes, 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 yes. So this is a band who has been completely lost. I think Rollins' band essentially slows down a lot by the late 90s. In that meantime, Rollins starts doing the acting thing in the late 80s, continues it with some success in the 90s, as well as doing spoken word. For the past 10 years, he's done a podcast, but otherwise been pretty light in public-facing stuff.
I mean, he's in every punk documentary. That's pretty much it.
In a bunch of punk documentaries, has had some small bit role acting stuff, but I feel like that's for like almost to the point where it feels like it's like, oh, you know what? I want to replace the garage door on my garage. Let me go do this day role on SVU. Sure. There. I just paid for the new garage door. Fine.
His podcast is actually, he hasn't put on a new one in a long time, pretty good. Yeah, it's fun.
I bet so. I mean, he's an excellent orator. So,
but sometimes he's up his own beehole, and this time, like, he's on there, I think, with his, like, I don't know if it's his manager, Heidi.
It's someone who it seems he has a very close relationship with.
Right. And she can call him on his bullshit. So it's like, it's a lot more fun than you would think, like a, and then day 74, I'm in South Dakota, punk spitting on me.
They get in the van. But so anyways, it's kind of wild to someone, if you got into music in the 90s, hearing that someone in 2022 would be like, Rollins band, what are you even talking? I don't know what that is.
I mean, probably wild. Bigger than Black Flag in a lot of ways.
Oh, for there's a moment, for sure. Not memory, but for sure in the moment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, Liar was like a hit. It was like on MTV constantly.
Yeah. Like, there's a chance, numbers wise, the record that Liar's on that compete with the biggest Black Flag record because of just the way that records sold back then, you know? Also, not for nothing, heard from friend of a friend that Rollins was very cool and engaging in a personal interaction recently. And it was on Weight, which is 94, the record after
right
after End of Silence, I believe.
Right.
Yes. So and this record, geez, let's see this it charted. I mean, it was a pretty big record. Wow. Hit number 3 on US Billboard.
You know what I didn't realize? And then I remember reading I was doing some like background on Rollins band, because you know that's what we do.
Yeah.
That some of the dudes in Rollins band were in Greg Ginn's old band.
Oh, really? In Gone?
Yeah. So soon after, Rollins formed Rollins Band with Haskett, Andrew Weiss, and drummer Sim Kane. Weiss and Kane had previously played with Gone, an instrumental rock group led by guitarist and Black Flag founder Greg Ginn.
Oh, God. How salty was he?
Right. And then, yeah, then because they formed in like, I feel like they were a Jersey band for a while.
Yes. So Rollins was living outside of Trenton. And yeah, they were formed. And, you know, like, so I believe, you know, like I City wasn't Gardens there. Early yeah, on. They played some City Gardens shows early on in their career. So, yeah, pretty crazy. Pretty crazy for sure.
Yeah.
Interesting. And I will stand behind Lifetime as a record. There's another that I like. But shout out to Rollins Band. Their streaming numbers being that low is pretty wild. And I have to imagine some of that is that some of these records just aren't really available. They're kind of just like in between things.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
because this record came out on Imago.
Imago. Record? Right. Right.
Like, yes. Yo, Tom, do you even, what is that label, guys?
Let's
oh,
see.
Oh, Rollins Band, Amy on. Mann, Paula That's Cole. Right. I don't know what Love Spit Love is.
Yeah.
The dude from Psychedelic Furs. Oh, look at this.
Yeah, you would know that. You would know Love Spit Love's
I
like.
I think I would. The hit.
They're like, they had a hit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Imago, whatever.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yo, we've spun the gamut. Do we got anything else, guys?
Oh, can I tell? I went to Denver.
Oh, yo, yeah. We didn't even get into this. Let's talk Denver, because you also let's consider this a pit report / vacay report.
Sure. Okay. So should I start from the shitty beginning or the rest of the good stuff?
Let's start with the bad part.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm flying out to Denver, Colorado on a Thursday. I'm supposed to get there about 2:00. Show's not till 7-ish. Perfect. I get, you know, I'm supposed to get into Denver, get to the hotel, probably, you know, shower, go to the show. I'm very excited. My flight ends up being delayed by 6 hours. Oof. I'm in LaGuardia from, I got there at 9:45 and we didn't take off till almost 5:30. So I did like a full-time job in LaGuardia, the new LaGuardia, which is actually kind of nice.
I've heard that. It's like night and day. I heard it's not just like, it's better than old LaGuardia. It's like, no, this is now pretty
No,
nice.
This is how like we should have airports in the United States. I mean, it's very nice. So it kept getting pushed back by like 20 minutes, a half an hour, like every 20. Like, so it'd be like, oh, cool. We're leaving at 2. Then it's 2:30. Then it's 3. Then it's like 2:00. And they're like, our plane has not left Tampa yet. I'm like, well, that's a problem because I'm in Queens. So I'm getting like texts and all this other stuff and messages, and they're like, you here yet? I'm like, dude, I haven't even landed yet. They're like, well, Sam I Am's about to go on. I was like, well, I ain't gonna get there for that. I literally got there. So I bought tickets to the show. I got there for the last 6 songs of a 27 song Descendants set.
Fuck.
But I mean, it was 50 minutes. It's like so fast. And then I got to see Jawbreaker.
Okay. Okay.
So, you know, whatever, whatever. So like, It getting to see them was great. You know, I had seen them before playing those songs. I got to like ran into a friend, Rob, my buddy Mark took care of us, you know, he took care of me, kind of showed me around town. I met Adam from Convulse.
Nice.
Doing great stuff out there. Met Chris from FUM, who we always called Fame.
Oh yeah. We do call him Fame.
Yeah. So I go, I'm really sorry. I'm an idiot. And he's like, I had no idea how to say it either. Imagine me being in France and saying it wrong. I'm like, all right, cool. We're on the same page. got to hang out with a bunch of folks out there. It was great. So then talking to our buddy Christian, who was on the podcast, I go, so I missed the whole fucking thing. You know, like this whole trip was for this show and to see Sam I Am and, you know, all this stuff. And he's like, are you still in Denver? I was like, yeah. And he's like, would you go again? I go, yeah, I'd go again. So he's like, all right, hold on. So this beautiful bastard gets me into the show, gets me like a spot standing, like sitting right above the stage, watching the whole thing. Now, mind you, Sam I Am went on at 6:30. The show ended at 11:30.
Okay.
It's a pretty long show.
Yeah.
Sam I Am was awesome. They played from 6:30 to 7. Place is mobbed. The place fits about 4,000 people.
Yeah.
And it was like 4,000 people they killed. Face to Face, who I liked one record like 25 years ago.
Incredible.
Really?
I mean, they were like a pro core punk band, like at a time where, you know, you could make money doing that. They were a real band, like a proper band.
Oh yeah, and they were like super impressive. They sounded great. Crowd went bonkers for them. I had no idea what to expect. I hadn't seen them in probably 20 years. They were great. They were awesome. Descendants were awesome. They played Mr. Bass. They played like songs off of like that I have never seen them play before. They were awesome. And then Jawbreaker was great. It was supposed to be a Dear You like playthrough. Right. But I think they did it like one night and they're like, yo, this sucks. Like the whole tour is based on them doing this record. So now they split the record up. They play every song from the record, but it's interspersed between like a normal set list.
Okay. All right.
Which is cool. I mean, it worked out great. They played Chesterfield King, which is one of my favorite songs ever that I've gone to see them like 7 or 8 times. They've never played it once. So that was awesome. Cool story. Related to that, a buddy of mine, Steve, his 14-year-old's favorite bands are Jawbreaker and Descendants. Right. Nice. So
shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Young kid. Obviously he's 14, or he's about to turn 14. So this is a big giant venue in called the Fillmore in Denver. 4,000 people, sold out 2 nights. Nuts. He buys a ticket. They won't let the kid in because it's 16 and up. So he ends up DMing the Jawbreaker Instagram and it was like, you know, here's a story. I don't know if there's anything that you can do to like talk to the management or whatever. And he said like 2 minutes later, he gets a DM back with his full name. And it's like Steve plus two. He's like, I got you. I'm like, all right. Yeah. They show up. They still give him a hard time. I show up at the venue. I see him, like him waiting near the buses. Literally 2/3 of Jawbreaker come out to like help the guy. And they end up getting his son in by like, he's like, pick up those boxes of merch and walk in and just keep walking. Keep your head down and don't talk to anybody. And that's how he got them in.
That's cool.
So like really Jawbreaker, cool. Who's playing in front of fucking 8,000 people over the course of 2 nights, like took the time out to like help get this like 14-year-old kid in.
Yeah, that's cool.
Which I thought was the fucking coolest thing. It was like so fucking awesome. And then I went to a Rockies game.
Nice.
Solo. I was like, fuck it. I got to see this. Rockies
Dodgers. How was it?
Yeah, it was cool. I didn't stay for the whole game because I was like fucking exhausted.
Yeah, that's the thing about baseball games. Sometimes you can just pop in and pop out. It's cool.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of see the place, you know, because it's always been such a nice, it's been spoken about as such a nice venue. But yeah, the show itself was great. I if you're within the sound of my voice and you like Jawbreaker and you like Dear You, I would really recommend you going to see them on this tour. I thought they were awesome. And they play like some other songs too. So it's like, you won't be disappointed. They have a second guitar player for the Dear You stuff since it's pretty, there's a lot to it. So they have somebody that comes out and plays with them. Yeah. Face to Face was like specifically like really super impressive. I did not expect to be, I was like, Sam I Am. I love Sam I Am. Love the Descendants. I was like, this is going to be a pain in the ass to sit through. And they were fucking awesome. Yeah. And then I came back. Flew back to New York, had nobody sit next to me, which is a wonderful thing.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Yeah. And then there was a shooting at the train station that I took for my entire life growing up.
Yeah, that's your neighborhood. It was my first thought.
Yeah. A lot of people are like, you okay? I'm like, I've lived there forever, but like, I literally, like, I took that to school every day. Ugh. Like, and like seeing those videos, I was like, fuck, I know exactly. Like, I've seen that a million times. And hopefully by the time you hear this, something will have been. You know, nobody died, thankfully, but it's some fucking scary shit.
Can I expand on your show going experience to talk about the Lemonheads performance?
Do you know anyone went? Because I heard really terrible things and it makes me sad.
Yeah. So a couple friends went and I saw a number of videos and the video, I thought when people were like, yeah, it was really bad. I thought, listen.
Like, how bad can it be? Those songs are great.
Those songs are great. And it's also like, they've got a bit
of a replacement sort of thing going, where if it goes off the rails, it goes off the rails. Fuck it.
Right.
But it was upsetting, is what it was. The videos were upsetting. Now, my understanding is, and our listeners can correct me if I'm wrong here, I don't keep too much abreast of it, but they were supposed to do other shows, maybe just one more or two more.
Well, I'm going to see them in Philly.
Well, no, but they were dropped from the Jawbreaker ones, I heard. Is that correct?
Oh, well, I'm supposed to go see them opening for Jawbreaker in Philly because they're doing It's a Shame About Ray in total.
Okay, so
that might not be happening then.
I heard, no, but again, this isn't like something I'm super keeping up, but I just heard that they were dropped from it. But here's my question to you, fellas. If somebody was having a late in life drug problem moment on stage, does this ruin your show going experience, or is this almost, maybe it's sad, but is it almost I definitely fucking saw something? Which one is it for you fellas?
I think it's sad.
Yeah.
Especially someone whose music, like, I love those records. And like it's baked into like those records that he was kind of an addict and kind of,
yeah.
It was like the romance of being like in love and being like a drug addict.
Yeah, no, I think that's why I'm maybe drawn to the stuff where it seems much more innocent, like Hate Your Friends sort of stuff. You know what I mean? Like, what, is that the name of the record?
Yeah.
I like that material, which is to me just kind of fun, clangy around, punkish sort of guitar rock, you know, but like it doesn't carry that same weight of, oh yeah, this motherfucker's fucked up, you know. So that's why I like it. But I just was thinking about it and I was like, I don't know if, again, everybody, not to ruin your tickets, I don't fucking know what's real, but like if they were dropped from something for a bad performance, I don't know what your responsibilities are. That's a grown man, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's nobody's job to look out for him except for him and maybe his family. But like if a 58-year-old man is having a thing, but I respect him as a man, I guess you're going to have maybe we'll have a thing tomorrow too. You know what I mean? Like, cause I'm not correcting him. Like I wouldn't invite, like, you know, I don't, maybe these fellas are clean now, I don't know, whatever, but like, I wouldn't invite like I Hate God on a thing and be like, I don't know, they're doing some I Hate God shit. It's upsetting.
You know what I mean? But I mean, he had been clean for a long time. And like, cause there's been times I've seen Jawbreaker. I mean, I'm sorry, seen Lemonheads where they were like incredible.
Yeah.
Like unbelievable, like on point. He was clean. Like they were just fucking unbelievable. And like the last time I saw them, I think we talked about it on here. Like I left because he was like, it was supposed to be over by 11. And like it took him 10 minutes to tune his guitar. And like he ended, like he was like doing cover, like literally it's like Unknown Jam, Evan on drums. And that was like 28 songs into the set. I was just like, yo, I'm out. And I left. Like, and he was like singing covers into the snare mic.
See, I would love to watch that unless it was like truly tragic. You know what I mean?
But I mean, like, isn't that tragic? Like this dude could have been, you know, like there's something really, and apparently in this one, like he forgot the words, had to restart stuff, like took his shoes off and threw him into the crowd. Like really, like someone who needs like immediate help.
Yeah. It's tough because like I said, this isn't a fella like stumbling into an addiction. This is a guy who's lived his life the way that he's lived his life. You know, whose responsibility is it to monitor him? And I guess, is there something wrong with us finding a novelty in what's happening? Maybe.
Yeah, I think a novelty in it is wrong, but suspending judgment is not. You know what I mean?
No. Listen. I don't think anybody that went to that and was like, "Yo, fuck this guy," is confused, but. Bob, here's a counterpoint, and maybe this one will hit for Tom because he might be a fan. For years, Cat Power famously you couldn't rely on a Cat Power show, right?
Right.
And
so you're just saying, for just the show of it, is it, can you go and see it and appreciate, even if it's not great, it was an experience.
Yeah. Even if it's, I mean, yeah, even if it's horrible, even if it's a meltdown. And you know, like for a time, you know, we have maybe this is interesting, maybe not, but it's, there's something to be said about the way that we frame mental health stuff, because Cat Power, it was almost part of the appeal for a while.
And I've seen Cat Power have like transcendent, amazing shows and some terrible shows. And I think Fiona Apple was like that, that it was like, you don't know what you're going to get. It could be, you know, but that's, I think that's more mental health than like, you know, like one of my favorite bands is Lucero, right? There are times that I've seen them drink so much that you're like, to me, that was different. Like I've seen them like go past curfew and like, you know, throw their guitar pedals into the crowd and just like play without the PA. Like then it's like, all right, this is, I'm along for the ride because half your song's about drinking whiskey.
Yep.
But like watching Evan Dando, who like, you know, is such an incredible songwriter, just like fall apart in front of you. Like I saw a picture of him with a friend of ours' son.
Mm-hmm.
From right before those Wilton, that Wiltern show. Right. And like, he looks like there's something gone.
He's not killing it. But, I mean,
no, but I think like he was more of a heroin guy from what I've learned over the years. He looked very, like that he might've been using like meth.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I mean, I could be wrong, but like, yeah, I mean, I don't get any joy of seeing like, I cringe when I see people having like meltdowns. It's never fun to me, at least. Like it's heartbreaking to kind of see, because that dude should be a fucking multimillionaire living in the lap of luxury for the songs that he's written, and he could never keep it together long enough to really kind of get what he deserved.
Yeah.
My personal opinion. I mean, it's different for everybody, but it does look like they're off the show in Philly.
Oh, okay. So I wasn't just talking out of my ass.
No, it looks that way. Unless it's, let me see.
That would let's call him a TBD. But yeah, I don't know. I found it really interesting because it's a fine line between something that is kind of a freak show or a horror show, and something that is you're witnessing a human moment. When it comes to drug addiction, obviously it tends to fall more into that horror show sort of thing. But I don't know. I'm just fascinated by how many honest moments do you get on a stage with like professional performers, you know,
who've been there.
But I mean, I think there's a difference. Right? I mean, I've gotten to see people that have like broke down crying in the middle of a song because it's like affecting them in a certain way or whatever. That's one thing. But like watching someone like, I don't know if that's an honest moment, them like being like so fucked up that they couldn't do like the
band. I mean, it's candid if nothing else.
Sure, sure.
But I don't know. I it's just an interesting thing. I guess it is. The more I'm reflecting on it, because I did watch the video, it's not good.
No, I haven't watched any of it yet, just because it's, you know, like it's rough to see, because it's like, you know, it's sad, you know, and it's like, I look at, you know, like how you look, like same thing with like Kanye and stuff. I'm like, this dude obviously needs help.
Yeah.
Like where are all these people that are around to like give him a fucking hand?
Well, there's a weird voyeur angle to it, because even in, you know, Kanye is a good example to use from a large scale, and then you shrink it down to a small scale, and you all of a sudden go, wait, is there a responsibility in an audience to the artist who's performing? Because that's the interesting part. Like, if the artist is there performing on a stage, Patrick's asking an interesting question, how many honest moments do you get versus, and honest is tough because it's just real. If it's genuine and real, you know, is there a performative element to what they're doing when it's going off the rails? And sometimes people might lean in and have that. I think there's examples of that through history. And then there's other moments where it's not. And I don't think that it, I think it can be fascinating and very deeply sad at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
You know, and I think it's okay for us to step away from a thing and say that and be able to say that. And also just think about the context of it. I think it's kind of, it's this weird, you know, we talk about it frequently. We don't want to speculate on people's money. And I don't want to speculate too much on a person's state of health and well-being other than to wish them for good. And when it's played out on stage, it can be rough. It can be messy. And it's not to say that it's one of those like, no, don't speak on this kind of thing. But you don't, I don't want to stare at it either and try to bring additional attention to it. If that makes sense.
It makes enough sense to me. Yeah, I don't know the number of, I always refer to one show where I saw a really raw human moment. And what's interesting is that the three of us reflected on this, I wonder how frequently or infrequently it would be one of the hundreds of hardcore shows that we've seen, and surprisingly probably not as many as we would think. Because also a thing with hardcore is that there's the performative part for at least some of the music that we all enjoy requires a machismo, you know what I mean? Of a type, like I can't be penetrated. I'm harder than this situation, you know? So that's one part of it. And then the other part of it is kind of the part that people really like, which is that it's not a professional genre in a lot of respects. So you're getting a lot of people who are kind of, they haven't gone far enough. They haven't been solid enough on a stage to be weak on a stage. Does that make sense? Like they haven't, maybe you have to be really good at something before you can be vulnerable at it. And before that, you're just trying not to fall apart. You know what I mean? Like, no, you're just trying to keep the wheels on.
And there might be, you know, like exceptions to every rule, but you're not wrong. I think I see what you're saying too. It's interesting to think about somebody's first experience going on the stage as a hardcore, as singer of a hardcore band. And that difference between, okay, I'm going up on stage, and like how different that is than being in like a fucking talent show or something as a child, you know, and the nerves and all that. And that you're going to go perform, but you're also supposed to be performing this very real, very, you know, some people might find it cathartic, but at the very least, you're supposed to be genuine expression. And then the contrast between that and then actually getting good at the thing.
Yeah.
You have to regulate yourself a little bit because you could blow your whole shit out in the first song. So you have, you know.
Yeah. I think that there's so much to like not being like that. Lack of professionalism is obviously just something that we all value, but it's also, you know, if you're white knuckle gripping the experience like this could go bad, then I don't know how much, like the human moment that I saw, which by the way somebody on this tour pointed out that old people from the Northeast pronounce human the way that I pronounce human, and I said, oh shit. Nah. which is true, but I'm sure I've said it on this podcast, it was Morrissey, and there's nobody more seasoned than Morrissey like in the world. You know what I mean? So like, I think he was able to have that moment because he's a machine. And when there's a little defect in the machine, you can register it pretty immediately, you know, like, but I don't know if somebody that, you know, has only played 30 shows in their life or like is still trying to develop who they are on a stage. I don't know if they can really have that. I could be wrong. Maybe there's somebody that has that every night, but sure. But anyway, a thing to reflect on.
I think you got a drug church set to get to, and we got some pit reports to play.
Those are facts. I will to the people of Arizona, I'm about to do my best.
Do your best, everyone.
What's up? This is Kevin Hare with a gig report of the Gridiron record release. It was Gridiron, Jesus Peace, Division of Mind, Queensway, Invoke, Moment of Truth, Surprise Set, Carried by Six at the Polish Club in lovely Phoenixville, Pennsylvania. 600 people packed in a basement of a Polish club, and this was an absolutely incredible gig. It was one of the best shows, I think, maybe ever in Pennsylvania. The Gridiron record release, the Gridiron set was incredible. They played for like a half hour. There were about 75 people on stage. The vibes were right. The pit was crazy. Total mosh, stage dive, sing-along, everything. It was just one of those you-had-to-be-there gigs that people will talk about for years to come. So Gridiron record release, all-timer.
What's up, guys? This is Stefan up in Everett, Washington, calling in with another pit report. So last weekend, Saturday, April 9th, 2022, I checked out the Touche Amore Vein Military Gun Scowl Tour in Seattle. I think somebody else had already called in on this one, but this will seem like a pretty special show to me, so I wanted to share my experience with it. So the gig was at the Crocodile in downtown Seattle. The venue recently moved to a new location, and it's a great space, open space, good sound, good vibes. And so, first of all, I was stoked to go to this show because I got to see my buddy Mac, who's been holding it down on merch duties for Touche this tour. Mac is from Alaska, so am I. So Alaska Hardcore represent. Mac, thank you for everything you do, booking shows in Alaska, keeping it real over there. And shout out to all the merch folks holding it down and supporting bands. It's a big job. So first up was Scowl. Unfortunately, I missed most of their set. I came in for like the last two riffs of the last song because of traffic. And the gig started a little early, so I'll definitely check them out next time they're in the Northwest. But next up was Military Gun, and for me, this was the highlight of the night. There was a lot of guest vocalists for this set. It was kind of a homecoming set for Military Gun. Ian shouted out being from Enumclaw, Washington, sort of a rural part of Washington. And so the first guest vocalist was Mark Palm of Super Crush, formerly of Go It Alone and Black Breath. And so they sang the Pressure Cooker song, the collaboration with Daisy that they did together, and it sounded great. Every song sounded great, super energetic, super professional. Ian has great stage presence as a front man. And so the next special thing about this set was Ian passing the mic to his brother Max. So as I'm sure a lot of the listeners here know, the story of Regional Justice Center, Ian's brother Max faced some unfortunate circumstances and spent some time inside, and I believe he was just released this year. And so he took the mic for part of a song, and he killed it. Soup obviously had some things to work out, and was very energetic. And so, Ian, look out. You know, your brother Max has some mic skills. I don't know, watch out. Anyways, great set from Military Gun. I've been really wanting to see them since they came out with their first 7-inch, and I'm super stoked to see where they go. Next up was Vein, and so Vein also faced some unfortunate circumstances with their drummer. Apparently he broke his wrist when part of the tour while he was skateboarding. So there was a rotating duties of drummers for this set. The drummer for Touche came on at one point. Ian played one song at another point, and then a few more folks came up. I didn't recognize everybody, but still a killer set. I mean, these are not straightforward hardcore songs. They're very dynamic, kind of turn on the dime riffs. So everybody did great. The set went smooth. Another band I've really been wanting to check out, and I was really impressed. I actually went to the show with my wife, and she was excited to see Vane as well. So at shows sometimes, since it's kind of loud, we'll pull out our notepad and write things to each other during a set. And so during the Vane set, she said, wrote on her notepad, "New metal converge?" question mark. And so there you have it. There's a hot take from my wife on Vane, "New metal converge." I couldn't agree more, and they're awesome. And so to close out the night, the headliner was, of course, Touche Amore. And y'all have said that this is a band people need to check out live, even if it isn't their cup of tea, their favorite thing. And I couldn't agree more. Just super professional, very in the pocket, very emotional, very honest vibes from these guys. And lots of sing-alongs from the crowd. You could tell people really latched on to the earnest energy of these songs. You know, they sing about things like real life stuff, like grief and loss and uncertainty. And I think people really connect with that, with Touche and this band. So it was really great to witness. So there you have it. There's my pit report. And in summary, hardcore fucking rules. It's we get to see people we haven't seen in a while. And work through things that, you know, maybe not have a clear answer, but we can work that out on the stage, work that out through music. And so stoked I went. Definitely check out these bands, and we'll see you next time.